We were in Quebec City. How many of you have been to Quebec City? Few of you. It was my first time there and Michelle's. It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. We stayed right in the old part of the city and it's got this European flavor to it. And one of the cool things was we got to, thank you so much, way better. We got to see the oldest city street in North America, La Rue Petite. Carly, what is it? La Rue Petite something. But it's there, and it's really cool, and it's so awesome. And we saw the oldest stone church in North America as well. And I also found out that my whole life I've been pronouncing my last name wrong. I thought it was Renault, and it's Renault. So I was like, oh, is it a popular French name? And they're like, no, not here, more in France. I'm like, okay. But it was funny, though, because I'm standing around people, and there's French signs, and there's French people, and you know, there's all this French culture around. I'm like, Michelle, I'm finally with my people. This is so good. And she goes, your people are from a French place in Winnipeg. You've never been to Quebec, and you don't even speak the language. These are not your people. So anyway, I was trying to explain. I didn't win the argument, but it was good. The reason we went there a day and a half early to kind of enjoy the culture, but we also went for a conference. Every year, there's a gathering of church planters from across this nation who descend in one place, and they change it all the time. This year is Quebec City, to hear about what God is doing in new places, in new church plants. And so we had the privilege of going. And when you have your airfare and your food and your lodging all taken care of by them, by C2C, our network of supporting us, how could we go wrong? So we thought, you know, we were so blessed on the trip and such great times of worship. And then you sit with people from Moncton to Saskatoon to Edmonton. There's a lot of church plants in Edmonton because there's a lot of people who need the Lord in Edmonton. But from there all the way to Vancouver, and you're just sitting with people and going, just tell me your place, tell me what your circumstance, and tell me what God is doing. And it was really just cool to see a bigger perspective than what we get to see normally, and how Yorkston fits into a bigger plan of what God is doing nationally, and God is at work, and we heard that, and we saw that, and we had a chance to worship with other people in multiple languages, and it was just phenomenal. I believe that God spoke to me this week as well, and I don't want to use that as leverage to say, like, wow, you got to lean in and listen to this, but I want to say that Michelle and I were trying to listen, and what is God wanting to speak to us, and what is his heart for us as a church as well? And so I want to just share. Basically, today is a sharing time from Ezekiel chapter 47, which was kind of spoken over us and I felt was something for me personally and something that I feel we all need to hear this morning as well. So with the leverage of this, of the Holy Spirit and the Bible, not just Jeff, I want you to lean in on this because I think it's this beautiful picture given in Ezekiel. And I want to ask us this question as I walk through it. Do we feel dry this morning? Do we feel dry this morning? As it pertains to our relationship with God, do we feel dry? Or is our relationship vibrant and rich? Is it active and living? Are we listening to God and God speaking to us and we're talking to him regularly? Or do we feel it's something less? Do we feel close to God this morning or far away? I kind of term it this way. Is our relationship with God this morning like a doctor? We always love doctors, but we only encounter them usually when needed. For the vast majority of our lives, that we're lived at a distance, but we're happy that he or she is around in case we need him or her. You know what I mean? Or is our relationship with God more like a best friend, a close companion, or a spouse, where dialogue takes place, information is shared both ways, feelings are expressed, and presence is just enjoyed? And so let's ask this question this morning and be honest with ourselves. Do we feel dry this morning? And I want to make sure we understand the difference and not just rush too quickly from this place. Where are we this morning? I had a chance to ask myself that this past week. Because I understand, especially in our culture, we all live hectic lives. You don't have to sell me on your life, and I don't have to sell you on mine and how busy it is. And we all also wear a number of hats on any given day. We are workers and laborers. We are children. We are parents. We are friends. We are aunts and uncles, grandparents, and siblings. We are calendar organizers, social coordinators, house cleaners and chauffeurs. We are budgeters, hard workers, dependable friends, and responsible citizens. And see, none of these titles are bad, and in fact, any of these, I think, can be admirable. But my question is this morning, where does Jesus fit into our day and into our identity? And where does Jesus want to fit into this? And so I want us to kind of keep this in mind as we go through this chapter a little bit. Where does Jesus want to fit into our story? And do we feel dry this morning? And I'm going to walk through this, and then after this, we're going to have a time of prayer, an invitation for anyone who wants to just open their heart and say, Jesus, I want more of you this morning. I want more of you this morning, and not just a religious Jesus, but a relationship Jesus. I want to understand Jesus in a new way, that you love me and how I can understand to love you more. But we're going to look into Ezekiel chapter 47, the fun book of Ezekiel 47. And so if you haven't looked in this for a while, maybe you've got to dust off the pages of Ezekiel chapter 47. But we're going to look through this. Ezekiel is a book in the Old Testament. Now, there are a number of books in the Bible called prophetic books. They were written by prophets many years ago. Prophets were basically the mediator between God and God's people. And God would speak to his people through these people called prophets. And there were so many of them. Ezekiel was one of them. And very early into God establishing a relationship with his people, he set out parameters. And they were pretty simple and straightforward ones. Basically, a lot of it took place in Exodus on the Ten Commandments, with Moses going up to the mountain and hearing from God and came down to speak to the people. And basically, the parameters were pretty easy. Obey, and you'll receive blessing from me. You'll receive fruit. You'll receive food. You'll receive relationship. You'll receive so much from me. Just obey my commands. But if you disobey, you will be a cursed people. And part of that cursing will be that nations will overtake you. Guys, it's simple. Just follow me. Well, there was a time when God's people disobeyed. And they disobeyed enough that God said, enough is enough. You see, rebellion was in the heart of camp. And if you've ever been close to a three-year-old who's grumpy or stubborn, we all know what rebellion looks like firsthand, don't we? I remember our kids, all of them, getting food that they didn't like while sitting in a high chair. And you could just see it. As you give them something, you know, like chocolate, and they're like, I'll eat that. But if you give them something that they don't want, they just look at you, and they just give you this defiant look, and they hold it over the table, their high chair, and you're like, oh, no, you're not. No, you're not. And they just, poof, open their hand up, you know. And our dog, Lewis, loved that. He loved it. Because it never barely hit the floor before. He was like, this is awesome. This is the best. But they look at you defiantly, and they're like, I know what the rules are here, but I'm going to open it up. Yeah, I'm doing it. Watch this. Boom, and it goes. And I think that's what Israel did a lot to God. God just said, I want you to be my people. I want relationship with you. Obey my commands because they're good and they're good for you. And the Israelites so many times just did this over the high chair. Boom, I'm going to drop it. I'm going to pursue other gods. I'm going to be distracted. I'm going to do this and pursue other things except you, God. And so this happened enough times that God finally said, enough is enough. And remember when I told you the parameters where you obey and you get blessings, but disobey and there's curse? The curse is going to happen. And what happened is a mighty power by the name of Babylon came in and took the Israelites out of their homeland. They no longer slept in their beds. They no longer walked to their local shops. They no longer hung out with their friends, but instead were prisoners in a foreign land hundreds and hundreds of miles away. And it's here, in this horrible place, being treated terribly in a land they knew nothing about and in a culture they knew nothing about, that God uses a man by the name of Ezekiel to speak to the Israelites while they were captive in a foreign country. This is what he said basically to them. Three things. Number one, Israelites, you blew it. Please understand, and the first place you need to be at is understanding admission here that you've blown it. We were warned as a people that if we didn't turn things around, God's wrath would be shown, and it was, and it now is. So don't play victim here. We knew what was coming, and so we can't feel sorry for ourselves. But there's two more things here, guys. Number one, God is still at work. He's calling all people to himself. Michelle and I saw this week and got a glimpse of that. And that one day, every person from every culture will recognize God for who he is and will worship him. And number three, as God is still at work, his plan is not ultimately to destroy us. His plan is not ultimately to have us in ruin, but rather to refine us and to show us that he alone is the author, giver, and sustainer of life. And it's only in him do we find life to the very full. And so as he's saying all these, Ezekiel says then, God has given me some visions of what that hope will look like in the future. Ezekiel is part of that hope, Ezekiel 47 that we're looking at today, the one day when the Israelites will be back home. And so let's look into Ezekiel 47, this picture of a one day that's not yet. Ezekiel 47, this beautiful picture. Starting at verse 1. The man, this is a heavenly being that took Ezekiel by the hand. The man brought me back to the entrance to the temple, and I saw water coming out from under the threshold of the temple toward the east, for the temple faced east. The water was coming down from under the south side of the temple, south of the altar. He then brought me out through the north gate and led me around the outside of the gate facing east. And hear this, the water was trickling from the south side. The water was trickling from the south side. Now we have to understand here that water is a pretty big deal in the Old Testament. In other words, water equals life. It's not the same here. In fact, today it's pouring rain. It's like, oh, the rainy season is here, right? We don't understand as much that water equals life, because 3 dry weeks in August doesn't mean that we understand what it's like to live in the Old Testament in a dry land. 35 degree weather for 3 weeks, it gets a little parched and our lawns turn a bit brown, but we know the rain is coming, right? Well, in the Old Testament and in the Middle East, they don't know that water is always coming. Water equaled life. And it's true in very few places more than the Middle East. So if you had it, in other words, if you had water, you were content. But if you didn't, you longed for water. You longed for it. So much so, check it out in the book of Exodus, the second book in the Bible. Moses has taken the Israelites out of Egypt, and they're in the desert. And this is how much they longed for water. They gathered one morning, and it said, so they quarreled with Moses and said, give us water to drink. Moses replied, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test? But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. Listen to how desperate they were for water. They said, why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst? They're ready to die. Then Moses cried out to the Lord, what am I to do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me. And the Lord answered Moses, go out in front of the people. Take with you some of the elders of Israel and take in your hand the staff in which you struck the Nile and go. I will stand there before you at the rock of Horeb. Strike the rock and water will come out of it for the people to drink. So Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel. And sure enough, water came out of the rock. And it brought life to people. It brought life to people who were dying of thirst. So water was a big part of Israel's past. Whenever they had it, they loved it and were content, and they knew that life was with them. And even though they're being held captive now at the time of Israel's writing, Ezekiel's writing, water is going to play a big part of their future as well. You see, in Ezekiel, we've seen our first glimpse of water coming from the temple. And it begins a slow trickle. It's almost like your hose in the yard that's got a hole in it. It's just kind of dripping. Well, that's what Ezekiel went by. But listen to what takes place as this progression happens. In verse 3, as the man went eastward with a measuring line in his hand, he measured off 1,000 cubits, which is about 500 meters. It's about a half of a kilometer. So if you think about going a half of a kilometer, he measures this out. And he led me through water that was ankle deep. He measured off another 1,000 cubits and led me through water that was knee deep. He measured off another 1,000 and led me through water that was up to the waist. He measured off another 1,000, But now it was a river that I could not cross because the water had risen and was deep enough to swim in, a river that no one could cross. And he asked me, Son of man, do you see this? Do you see this? Water equals life. Ezekiel goes from walking through a trickle of water to within 2 kilometers seeing a river that he cannot pass. And he's asked this question that's almost rhetorical. Do you see this? It's kind of like, how can I not see this? Look at this progression of water. But he's making sure, Ezekiel, are your eyes open to this? And then the heavenly being shows him what the water is for. Then he led me back to the bank of the river. When I arrived there, I saw a great number of trees on each side of the river. He said to me, this water flows toward the eastern region and goes down into the Arabah, where it enters the Dead Sea. When it empties into the sea, the salty water there becomes fresh. Swarms of living creatures will live wherever the river flows. There will be large numbers of fish because this water flows there and makes the salt water fresh. So where the river flows, everything will live. Now, about 10 years ago, Michelle and I had the privilege of traveling to Israel. And we brought Reese and Carter along. That's the only 2 kids we had at the time. The other 2 weren't born yet. And so we brought them along. And one of the things that we got the privilege of doing was actually going to swim in the Dead Sea. Now, once you get in, you realize it's not really like swimming in the Dead Sea. It's more like floating in the Dead Sea. You've probably seen pictures like this. I mean, you've seen that, you know, it's kind of like, you can actually do that. It's incredible. You can actually sit there and float. The Dead Sea is 1,400 feet below sea level, being the lowest point on Earth. It has a salt level of over 34%, which makes it 10 times saltier than any ocean on Earth, and thus makes it impossible for anything to live or sustain life of any kind. And so when Reese was 3, Carter was 18 months, we went there, and they wanted to swim in there with us. And so in 40-degree weather in Israel on a hot, dry day, off we go. Doesn't it look refreshing? But as you get in, you realize it's not so refreshing after all. Within 5 minutes, everything just started to itch and sting because of the salt. I think I had a hangnail that had just come off, and it was like, you feel it everywhere. And suddenly I was sweaty, and so I went to wipe the sweat out of my eyes. Not such a good idea, I'll tell you that right now, because all this salt, 34% salt, all of a sudden is in my eyes. And all of a sudden, Reese is screaming and crying because she's in the water, and she's all itchy and stinging. And she's telling us that her doll is stinging as well. So you need to get them all out of here. So we rushed out as fast as we got in, and it was just not a great experience. And so in our desperation, we went up to another place on the road that our tour book told us had fresh water, a place called En Gedi. And again, in 40-degree weather, feeling salty and gross and thirsty, we trekked up, and I was thinking we actually might die on this hike. This is it for us. I don't know where we're being led to, but this is it. But then we found it. We found it. You see, in En Gedi, there's this number of waterfalls, fresh water waterfalls, falling into these big basins and filling up before they move on their way. And we got in a little bit scared because we just had a bad experience in another body of water, but we get in and we're like, this is fresh water. This is amazing. And we stayed there for like 3 hours. It was shady. It was still 40 degrees, but we just swam in the water because it was beautiful and it was fresh. And it was also really memorable because Carter, being 18 months, decided that he just had to poop. So he pooped right on the edge of En Gedi in Israel. We're like, this is perfect timing. Only an 18-month-old can do. But kind of awkward. But at the same time, there was no tourists around at the time, so we just covered with rocks. We just kind of went on our way. But it was phenomenal to enjoy fresh water after being in such salt for so long. So this picture of water bringing life isn't just for a parched land, but it's also for a parched water. A water that when fresh water hits it, becomes fresh again. Do you sense the healing agent in all of this? Listen to the rest of this. Swarms of living creatures will live wherever the river flows. There will be large numbers of fish because this water flows there and makes the salt water fresh. So where the river flows, everything will live. Fishermen will stand along the shore. They don't even need to go into the water. They will stand on the shore from En Gedi to Englim. There will be places for spreading nets. The fish will be of many kinds, like the fish of the Mediterranean Sea. But the swamps and marshes will not become fresh. They will be left for salt. Fruit trees of all kinds will grow on both banks of the river. Their leaves will not wither, nor will their fruit fail. Every month they will bear fruit, because the water from the sanctuary flows to them. Their fruit will serve for food, and their leaves for healing. Water equals life. What a beautiful picture of what life will look like one day if only Israel stops turning their backs on God and come back to Him. It's a beautiful picture, but it's interesting that Ezekiel notes that not everything becomes fresh and full of life. He states that there are still swamps and marshes in his view, and that they stay salty and void of life. But where the river flows, everything will live and everything will flourish. And so I go back to the question I posed at the beginning, and I ask us this morning, honestly, are we dry this morning? You see, the progression of water levels is interesting. It's almost as if Ezekiel is a front row seat to the power he has over the water. You see, at first it's a trickle, and he's still in full control. But then it becomes ankle deep. But if we've ever been in ankle deep water, we know we're still in full control. And then at knee deep, and then at waist deep. But even at waist deep, Ezekiel can still be the one calling the shots. But once the water gets past him, he says it is a river that no one can cross. It's almost as if there's a progression of relationship with God that takes place here, that God is actually beckoning Ezekiel, and by doing so, inviting us into the deep, where he is at the center of our lives and he is in control. And it is a good place to be. And so my question is, are we dry this morning? As God beckons us into the water, how deep are we willing to go? This question is for all of us. Maybe you've walked into church this morning and you're like, Jeff, I haven't got a clue what you're talking about, this whole water image, and I don't understand because I'm not in any sort of water as it relates to God. But God is calling us into this water, into a relationship with Him. Maybe you've been a believer and a follower of Jesus for decades and you know all the answers. But you would admit this morning, I am dry, Jeff. You would say, I'm dry because I know the answers, and yet I don't feel God close to me. And yet, I believe for all of us, God is beckoning us into this place in the middle of the river where He is the one in control, and He is good. It's crazy. This spring coming up, on June 6th, 2018, it'll mark the 20-year anniversary that Michelle and I have been married. 20 years. I feel old. You're like, well, it's because you are old, Jeff. It's like, thank you. But I feel that way because 20 years is kind of a long time. And I can tell you all about the early days of Michelle and I's relationship, of us hanging out at Bible college and getting to know each other. And it's more of a fact-finding mission, finding out about where we're from and our families and what we like to do and all these types of things. I remember meeting her friends for the first time and then driving up to this place called Houston, B.C., and meeting her family, which, by the way, her dad met me with a sawed-off shotgun at the door. But that's a story for another day. He actually did like me, but it was kind of intimidating. You got to be honest. But I can remember our conversations over the months going deeper. And through all of that, our affection for each other growing deeper as well. Then this amazing day came when we drove to the place where I proposed to her, at Williams Park here in Langley. And I remember it so clearly because my heart was beating out of my chest. And I also remember it because the whole time Michelle was complaining that we were never going to get engaged. School was ending for the year, and she's like, we're never going to get engaged before everybody goes home, and they're not going to be able to enjoy all this, and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm sitting there going like, seriously, Michelle, just be quiet. Like, we're getting engaged in a couple of hours here. Just calm down. But it was something that took place, and then she goes home, and she shares the excitement with all of her friends. And that was the day that changed everything because we were engaged. And then June 6th, we stood before each other and shared our vows with one another. We built a life together so far. We have children. We both have ministries that we feel so called to and love. We've got a home. We've got friends. We've got experiences that we would never trade for the world. We have so much. But wouldn't it be weird if after 20 years, we were still just going to Tim Hortons and that's all we did and just found out more about each other and said goodbye and I'll see you later or I'll call or text? Wouldn't it be weird if I was saying, okay, so can you remind me of your siblings' names again? Okay, one of them is Dustin, but I forget after that. And who are your parents again? Like, I can't remember. Wouldn't it be weird if we stayed at this level, finding about our favorite sports teams and hobbies and things to do? After 20 years, there's an affection that grows for one another where we trust each other, where there's a deepening of relationship. Wouldn't it be funny if Michelle asked me for her bank card because she lost it and I said, I'm not going to give it to you. I just don't trust you with my money and I don't know what you're going to do with it. And it's my money, so no. Just give me your dang bank card, please. You know, it's like, why? Because there's a relationship that has grown, because there's a trust that is built and it's our money. It's not just mine and hers. There's a depth of relationship we enjoy over time. Are we dry this morning? Have we been a follower of Jesus for some time, but our affection has plateaued for Jesus? Are we happy to keep God at a distance when all the while he's beckoning us to go deeper into the water, perhaps out of our element, but right smack dab in the middle of life-giving water? Or are we pursuing other things in life? Actor Jim Carrey once said this. He said, I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed of so they can see that it's not the answer. I think he's saying so that they can see that there's still a void after we have done everything we want to do in life. But this void is a place where God beckons us to remind us that he is the source of life. You see, when we look at this picture from Ezekiel, and I want to show you this. This is awesome. This is really cool. Ezekiel 47 isn't merely a physical picture that Ezekiel is witness to. It's also a spiritual one. And I want to show us how this ties in together and how Jesus is the fulfillment of this. Because Jesus is calling us to enjoy a relationship with him. And Jesus knows all about water. Check this out. In John chapter 7, hundreds of years have gone by since Ezekiel and this picture has gone on. But Jesus is standing in Jerusalem and he's at the temple. And there's a festival going on called the Festival of Tabernacles. And what takes place is this. For 6 days, this water ceremony takes place. There's a number of priests every single day for 6 days. They walk to this these springs. And they fill up this golden bucket of water. And they all chant from there at the time. Isaiah chapter 12, where it says, with joy you will draw water from the wells of salvation. And so imagine all these priests going there. This one priest takes this bucket and fills it up with water, and they're all shouting these wells of salvation and all of this. And they walk back to Jerusalem, to the temple. And every day for 6 days, one of the priests takes this bucket and he pours it on the altar. And what he's doing this is he's saying two things. Number one, God, we look to you for physical water because we don't know when the next rain is going to come in our dry land. But he's also saying, God, we look to you as the giver of life because water equals life. And God, we need you. And so they do this for 6 days. But all of a sudden, after they've done this for years and years and years, on the seventh day, they come back to Jerusalem and there's someone standing there. And his name is Jesus. And this is what Jesus says in John 7, verse 37. On the last and greatest day of the festival, Jesus stood and said in a loud voice, let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as scripture has said, listen to this, rivers of living water will flow from within them. In other words, Jesus knows that he is the fulfillment of Ezekiel 47. That God's people aren't just waiting on dry land. They're waiting for a person. And that person was Jesus. And that person calls us to walk with him. Are we aware this morning of how much Jesus loves us? Are we aware of that? Or is our Christian walk kind of an academic thing? As we set up here, as we do so much, as we set up the stage and pour our hearts into things and help in the children's area and make breakfast and greet and all of these things to make Jesus known in our community, is Jesus being made known in our lives? Are we fully in tune with just how much Jesus pursues us? Not to get anything from us, but simply to be with us, to talk to us, to listen to us. My 10-year-old son, Carter, is in hockey. And last week, he scored his very first goal of the season. Of course, I wasn't there to watch it. Had to happen while I wasn't there. But when I found out about it, honestly, it was as if the Calgary Flames had just won the Stanley Cup. I felt like Facebooking it and phoning my friends and just saying, seriously, my son just scored. I almost put it in the bulletin this week. I really did. By the way, just so you guys know, Carter scored his first goal of the season. They're away at a tournament this weekend. He scored another goal. I can't see these goals. But needless to say, I was excited for him. You see, our team has maybe scored 40 or 50 goals this year. He scored one. But I can tell you the best goal of the season. It's Carter's goal. Do you know why? Because he's my son. And I'm kind of fond of the kid. And if it came to it at any point in my life, I would trade my life for his in a second. I'm proud of him. Deeply proud of him. Do we realize that day in and day out, as we live, that we have a creator who is deeply in love with us? That as we do the things that we do, God says, "Do you see that? Did you guys see that? I am in love with them." It's an affection so deep that Jesus came to die on a cross for us because of this passionate love and pursuing of a creator. And even on a cross, listen to what took place in John chapter 19. Listen to this. "But when they came to Jesus and found that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. Instead, one of the soldiers pierced Jesus' side with a spear," and listen to what comes out, "bringing a sudden flow of blood and water." Blood and water. Even in Jesus' death, life-giving water flows to bring forgiveness to us all. We see water in Ezekiel 47. We see water in John chapter 7 when Jesus is at the temple. And we see water when Jesus dies on a cross. For what? To bring us life and life to the full. Are we dry this morning? Is Jesus the object of our affection? Or is he something we tuck away? I speak from this in a place where I can't tell you I've been rich in the middle of the river my whole life. I can't tell you that I've been in the middle of the river for the past year or month or the last 7 days. But it reminds me that as we are here, we're not just trying to transfer an ideology to people around us. We're trying to bring people to the author and giver of life. And is he that to us? I was challenged and encouraged. Is Jesus that for me? Is Jesus part of what I do as a pastor, or is Jesus everything in life to me? This is why we sing worship songs, songs that we know probably. If you've come to church here a few times, we sing songs that we already know. We don't go, "Done that one already, let's move on, guys, let's do something new." Because while we sing these songs, we know it rekindles our love and affinity for Jesus. That's why we encourage to read our Bibles, not for just history and life events, but because we believe that God speaks to us through the Bible. God speaks to us today through this. That's why we encourage people to get involved in life groups, in smaller groups, not just for mental stimulation or social gathering, although those things can take place, but it's a stirring of our hearts towards Jesus. God is calling out, "Come. Come. Come." Where are you in the river this morning? Is Jesus kind of this distant doctor who's there if we need him, but we're just at a distance from him, and we're maybe in ankle-deep water, fully in control of our lives, and Jesus is this academic? Are we waist-deep and content in that? Content in saying, I do quite a bit around here, and I give to the church, and I'm trying to be the best dad I can, and I'm waist-deep. What does God want from me? Come. Come to the middle of the river where the life-giving water is there, where Jesus is everything, and he reminds us that he loves us and his affection is for us. And if we're already deep into the water and we can rejoice and celebrate that, Jesus is calling us to stay there and to continue to have more of him in our lives.